and welcome to Motoring First. The monsoon isn't here yet, but it's certainly raining pulses. There's another one this week.
Another weekend, another pulsar. Three in a row now.
Is it?
I think there was a week's break in the middle, you know, just so could recover from the pulsar overload.
Pulsar mania, really.
Yeah, but yeah, third pulsar in a row.
Now, these are the highlights for me. It's the largest displacement pulsar, right?
Currently, yes.
Currently, okay, fine. Maybe there's something to go with over there as well. But largest displacement pulsar yet. And I think the real shock about this pulsar is its price tag, right? Sub 2 lakh rupees for a 400cc motorcycle.
Correct.
Right? Takes me back 10 years to the 390 Duke.
Correct.
Which started off then.
At roughly this price, I think. Yeah.
Which was crazy.
Yeah.
So 10 years later, we're getting a 400cc pulsar for the same price, which is incredible.
Yes.
So this is the route that I wanted to understand. So this is the second iteration of that engine, which came with the second gen Duke.
Second iteration?
As in, because the first gen Duke, then there was the second gen Duke.
Yeah.
Right? And this is, I didn't even think about the Dominar. So it went to the Dominar. It was tuned for the Dominar. So this is the Dominar spec that has come here?
Yeah.
Same.
Of course.
Ah. Okay.
You were actually thinking that Bajaj would look at, say, the Gen 2 KTM engine and then do all of that work for the Pulsar?
I was hoping.
And if they did that, do you think they'd have the 1.85 lakh rupee price tag?
That is the part that seems least important to me. That was the surprise. I mean, for a 400cc motorcycle, just to be under 2 lakh rupees wasn't my key requirement.
But that's the linchpin around which the entire Bajaj conversation has revolved.
Yes, and in that case, it also kind of increased my focus on what the motorcycle was, right? In some ways, it's a 12-year-old motorcycle with the chassis.
In theory, yes. The chassis has some new parts in it. Fortunately, they have done some new parts there.
But that perimeter frame is when it started with the 200
Yes.
Duke.
Let's call it the Dominar frame because it's more accurate than calling it the NS200's frame.
Oh.
So it's the Dominar's frame.
Oh, really?
Which changes. Whenever you're done making assumptions, then I start on what they've actually done.
Nice.
And honestly, they've not done a lot. Huh. The pro of not doing a lot is why the cost is so good.
Yeah.
The price is so good. And why they've not done a lot is also why this motorcycle is a strange flagship.
Okay. I think and as usual, he and I have actually stayed away from each other about this conversation surprisingly very well, because it's been a couple of days since he's ridden it and we've been driving and traveling together and we've steered clear of this topic completely.
Correct.
And it wasn't easy. So everything that he's sharing right now is a genuine surprise for me.
Yeah.
Okay, can we get to the bottom line first?
So the upshot of the Pulsar, and we'll discuss this in more detail, is that it is an extremely value for money 400cc motorcycle. But as I have said this in the context of Dominar, I'm going to say it again. You can't ride value for money. So I would tell you very, very strongly, think about whether you like this Pulsar first. And if you do, it's a great value for money purchase. But don't purchase this Pulsar because you think it's great value for money. Because what I've learned over the last 24 years is value for money doesn't go around corners. It does not brake, it does not accelerate, and it does not make you feel things a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later. It only needs to confirm that, yes, I like this bike. Yes, it's value for money. I should get one. That should be the order of discussion.
Yeah.
Okay. So what they've done is actually more or less a parts bin motorcycle. You remember back in the day when Volkswagen Group, for example, would do a lot of parts bin sharing across cars. Yeah. And then they change the interface element so an Audi wouldn't feel like a Volkswagen or whatever. This is pretty close to that. And this is one of Bajaj's traditional strengths also. So let's not take away credit in the idea that they do this really well. They're very clever at it. So think about this motorcycle as a Dominar engine with the twin spar frame from the Dominar, wearing a new subframe where the seat sits, wearing a new swing arm where the wheel mounts. It has the N250's wheels because they are lighter, so you get a weight advantage from there. It has new bodywork, which is very, very strongly resembling the NS200's bodywork. So that sense of, oh, new bike, you don't really get that. It's there. It's not, wow. No. It's
what exactly is new?
I'll tell you. I'll tell you. We'll come to design. And in the front, the new headlight fairing marks it out as a slightly different Pulsar. Is it different enough? We'll discuss in detail. So wheels are different, swing arm is different, subframe is different, engine mapping is slightly different.
Okay.
All of that is the same. Slight difference in map, which has not clearly been explained. Mm-hmm. On top of which, Bajaj is adding electronics to this motorcycle.
Okay.
So you have connectivity, you have riding modes, and these are actual riding modes, not ABS modes this time. There's a new instrument cluster, which includes a LCD display and a dot matrix display for more information. We'll go into it in more detail. And all of this packaging together will come to you. I think by the time you see this, it should be in dealerships already at an introductory price of 1.85 lakh rupees.
Mm.
Bajaj has not clarified what the new price will be at the end of this period, nor have they clarified when this period will end.
Okay.
So we don't know when the price will change, but will the price change by 10%, which is 18,000 rupees? I doubt it.
Correct.
This bike is designed to be inexpensive to purchase. It's the job of this motorcycle, and that's where we're going to stay. And I'm telling you that it is going to be inexpensive because I think this is strategically what Bajaj is doing in the 400 class, which we'll discuss towards the end when we're discussing price in and of itself.
And also from a business standpoint, because this is, I mean, the cost it takes, the materials to build the engine and the frame is far lower than this price tag. It's also the cost of R&D, engineering, all those, what is called as amortization of those large costs, right? That's over and done with over the 10, 12 years that, you know, they've had this engine and the platform, right?
Yeah.
It's over and done with. So they can afford to price it low because of that.
Correct.
So now?
So, on the front of the engine, the change from the Dominar, there's not many. I told you the mapping has changed slightly. Mm-hmm. They've lowered the gearing. They've got a slightly one tooth larger sprocket at the back.
Okay.
The big change is on the frame front, where if I'm remembering my numbers correctly, it was 28 odd degrees for the Dominar steering angle.
Okay.
The NS200 was 26 something. This bike is 25. It's very sharp.
Okay.
And the sharpness of the steering and the new swing arm are credited for reducing the wheelbase quite a bit from the Dominar. So this is a far more compact chassis. And what that means is, in terms of user benefit, it will be a far more sporty feeling chassis. Is it or not? We'll talk about in just a moment.
Weight.
Weight has come down 18 kilos in total.
So what is it?
45% of the weight saving, according to Bajaj, has come from the bodywork. Yeah. You want the actual official numbers? I'll give you the actual official numbers.
I really want to know because...
I'll give you the actual official numbers.
Okay.
I asked this question and it says 15% of weight savings have come from the powertrain itself. 25% of the weight saving has come from swing arm and frame. And remember, the swing arm is new.
This is all relative to the Dominar.
This is all relative to the Dominar. The alloy wheels save 15% of the weight. These are the N250s wheels, which were created to be light, and they've been slowly rolling it out to more and more machines. These are the same wheels again. And the bodywork saves 45% of the weight. So the Pulsar NS400Z, it saves something like 8 kilos in bodywork over the Dominar. Yeah. So they've, in mathematics terms, this bike actually really works.
Hmm.
Okay. In the real world, it's not that great.
Hmm.
It's not bad, but it's not that great. Okay, so what I did on this day, I instead rode the bike 240 kilometers, I think. And just for those guys who want to know the route, it's a great route. We started in Lonavala at the resort where these bikes were given to us. I went down to Khopoli, took the road that goes past the iMagica, down through Durshet towards a place called Vakan, which is on the new NH66. There's a small amount of construction there. Go up to Mahad, then take a left. And that road goes all the way through Tamhini and you come into Pune and then you do the bypass and then you go to the Chakan plant where I returned the bike. So in all, I put about 240 kilometers and honestly, I had a great ride because I was riding in 41, 42 degree heat and therefore there was nobody else on this road. It was like a private road effectively. And he's seen the footage. He's not discussed the bike with me, but he's seen the footage and there's like minutes of footage of me riding this bike and there's not a car in the frame. So I had a great time riding the bike. Mm-hmm. What I learned from this is that first, the rain mode is a very soft mode to the point where it's almost boring. But when I rode it in the dry, obviously it will feel boring because the responses are really lethargic. But I can see that in the rain, new riders who've been able to afford a 40 bhp bike because the price is so low, I think you should stay in rain mode because it will help you.
Okay.
Slightly more aggressive than that is the off-road mode, which again, don't think of it as an off-road mode as much as a low intervention mode. Just like we said for the N250.
Low intervention for?
As in, you'll be able to spin the wheel a little bit more.
So this has traction control?
It does have traction control.
Okay.
So you'll be able to spin the wheel a little bit more. ABS will kick in a little bit more gently, so you can slide the rear if you want to. So just the idea saying I'm on a dirt road and I'm struggling because traction control is interrupting me, there is
so
an
better control for those.
There is an off-road mode for it. Don't think of it as an off-roader because honestly it's not.
Hmm.
Above that is the road mode, which is a reasonably gentle mode. It's non-aggressive. And then there is sport mode, which I wish was more aggressive because I think it's not aggressive enough. But that is the closest this bike comes to a linear throttle map.
Closest to a linear throttle
map? Yeah. The riding modes are basically designed to be super gentle, which is the oddness about this bike. Okay? So the Pulsar NS400Z doesn't have a single mode where it has quick reactions. Everything happens slowly. I think what Bajaj has done is they've created a really gentle 400. So my impression of riding this bike was like a powerful 250 rather than a weak 400. Because it's not like it lacks performance. It's not like you're not able to hit 120 whenever you feel like. But it feels like it's taking its time to do it even in sport mode. So I didn't have a sense of an urgent motorcycle or a motorcycle that had a mode where it would be urgent enough. It felt like everything was done deliberately and considered. And I didn't enjoy that. Now, if you've never ridden a 40 bhp motorcycle, I still think you'll find this motorcycle exciting. But if you're a sporty, aggressive kind of rider thinking I'll buy a 1.9 lakh rupee 400, you're not going to be happy with how much aggression this Pulsar lacks.
It's been a while since I rode the Domina, so I don't really remember it all that well.
I consider you very lucky to be able to say that. I'm also very lucky. I've also not ridden a Domina in absolutely ages.
So this is a bit of a contradiction for me in the way that I'm thinking about it on two fronts. One is that the 390 was always known to be a slightly aggressive kind of motorcycle.
Correct.
Right? And second, it's a Pulsar. This is that we're talking about, which is known for being bottom heavy and then flattening off.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, aside from the throttle maps, what you're talking about in terms of behavior also, it feels like it's a very linear kind of performance.
Again, they've tuned this bike more for mid-range than anything else.
Okay.
So, is there grunt off the bottom? Yes. Does it feel exciting because of it? No, because the throttle response is just too glacial in the lower modes, especially in even sport mode. It feels commuterish almost is how conservative the strategy is. And I don't think it's a lack of performance.
So, is it easy to ride at lower
speeds? Super easy. Super easy.
Which is something we never would have said for the 390.
Yeah. And again, you remember what we said were the NS200 versus N250.
Yeah.
The N250 wanted to be super linear, ends up feeling like a commuter. The NS200 says, I am sporty, rev me out, and you have a better time there.
Yeah.
So the NS200 has power at the top. The NS400 has power in the middle. So it's a weak bottom, and it's not actually weak. It feels weak because the throttle response isn't aggressive enough. Then in the middle, there is performance. But again, the throttle response is weak. So you don't have a sense of, I opened it and it went. It
doesn't feel immediate.
It went, but it didn't feel like it gave you an emotion out of it, right? And then the top end is there, but it's reasonably flat compared to the mid-range. So once you get to about, I want to say 120 on the speedo indicated, the rest of the 30 odd kilometers an hour that this bike will do, it's not exciting. So it's a very gentle 400, which is why I want to set that expectation correctly. Right. If you're thinking you're going to spend 1.9 lakh rupees and get a great feeling 400, you're not going to get. You're going to feel like a very powerful 250 is what you acquired. And it's a very non-aggressive 250. The frame is actually aggressive. The engine is not aggressive.
Frame is?
Yeah, because they've compacted the steering geometry. They've reduced the wheelbase. So, you know, you have those bikes where you feel like both the wheels turned as one and the wheelbase is really short.
Yeah.
It's that feeling.
Oh, wow.
So it instantly changes direction. It feels really good in the corners.
Okay.
It has a very clever suspension setup, and it's a completely new suspension setup. So if you were to compare it to the Dominar, you'd find the same kinds of hardware. Like if the Dominar has springs, so does this. But they're all different. And the tuning is very Orleans-like or very Showa-like if you prefer.
So upside-down telescopic fork, same diameter.
43mm upside-down, same. The hardware is exactly the same spec as the Dominar. The tuning is completely different.
Okay,
Bajaj didn't give us a sense of higher compression, lower compression. They didn't tell us this. They didn't break it down. But the idea is it's really gentle at the bottom. So it's absorbing the small bumps and making it feel very plush in the same way that you know, recognize as current Showa suspension setups. Like on the Himalayan, for example, or the Maverick. And
but the initial stroke is really plush.
Initial stroke is really plush and soft. So if you're going normally, riding normal speeds, it feels like a very comfortable, supple motorcycle.
Right.
But when the bumps start getting larger, where the N250 used to get really upset, this bike remains composed. And now it feels sporty, but with a sophisticated edge. Not as good as the Speed 400, but going towards that kind of control. And it feels really good because of it.
All right.
So on the bad patches, did I feel like it was a super comfortable, luxurious? No. Sporty. But was it uncomfortable, harsh, nervous? No. It knew what it was doing. Perfect. And did a good job.
Yeah.
And that at a budget scale. So it didn't feel as sophisticated as a P400 doing it, but it felt like, yeah, I can do this job. So you're aware of the fact that the cost has been cut, but it doesn't hurt you, at least as far as the suspension setup is concerned. It's a good setup. So the chassis is actually really good. I really enjoyed riding this bike around the corners. And the tires also, they've cost.
It's interesting that you're going referencing this to the Speed 400.
Because Speed 400 is one of the suspension setups that we like, but it loses control over the highway where it becomes slightly bouncier. Hmm. The Scrambler 400X is a less good suspension setup, but it's a better balance across a range of speeds. Hmm. So as a reference point, this has that kind of control at low speeds. It has that kind of gentleness.
But more about the 390, because the new gen 390 also, I thought
390 is another level. I won't want to bring it. Yeah, yeah, I won't bring it here. The 390 level cannot be touched by any of these motorcycles.
Okay,
it has outperformed all of these things. Right? To me, the 390's benchmark would be Himalayan. Obviously, they're two entirely different genres of suspension. So it's not a one-to-one comparison. But the brilliance of the Himalayan suspension and the brilliance of the 390 Duke's current adjustable suspension setup, that's benchmark. I think when the 2025 390 Adventure comes, then I think the Himalayan might get eclipsed. Because it will be this kind of sophisticated tuning, but with adjustability, I'm hoping that will be awesome. So NS400Z chassis, it's really good. The brakes similarly, they're not weak feeling, but they're not sporty feeling. So there's lots of performance. You can use it. Organic brake pads, and they didn't affect me too much. Until I rode the second unit, I didn't even realize that the lever had become a little bit longer. Mm. I didn't even notice it. Okay, so the brakes are decent. Grimeca brakes. New rotors. These are also mounted to the hub more or less, so the carrier is much lighter. There is some unsprung weight being saved. Bajaj has not explicitly said anything about it. ABS is standard, dual channel, and you've got the ABS modes. In off-road mode, you can switch off the ABS and lower intervention, just like we spoke for the N250.
Okay.
Traction control is there. The couple of times it intervened, because it was a super dry and great roads, there was no real reason for traction control to become active. And because the throttle is so soft and gentle, there's no real chance for you to lean it over a little bit, whack the throttle open and see if the traction control will activate. So the only time it activated was when I think came over a speed breaker a little bit too quickly, knowingly opened the throttle early to trigger it. And then it was a heavy-handed intervention. But it was a heavy-handed situation. So I can't tell you that it is smooth, unsmooth or whatever. Okay. It's there. You can turn off traction control in sport mode and in off-road mode. If you want to turn these off, I think you have to go below 20 kmph to trigger it. Otherwise, it doesn't trigger.
Okay.
So my overall impression of the Pulsar 400Z is if you think about it as an exciting 400, you're going to make a mistake.
Okay.
If you think about it as a competent 400 that you'll enjoy riding and it does everything reasonably well, I think you'll be okay.
Actually, I'm not being able to place how I'd feel on the bike.
Sitting position is almost exactly the same as the NS200.
Ah, okay.
Okay, so the seat unchanged.
Hmm.
So the handlebar is new, but the riding position is similar. Hmm. So this is not a clip-on anymore. This is a one-piece handlebar setup.
Oh, great. That's a...
So it's a sporty position. It's a comfortable position. You sit a little bit high up on the bike. Hmm. Feels nice. There's no new information to add to.
Fine.
If you're familiar with an NS, the 200 especially, you know what the 400Z will feel like.
This is the second you said Dominar chassis. Somewhere the sense of...
No, it's just the chassis. Huh. There's nothing else from the Dominar coming, thankfully. It's a very simple replication of the NS formula with critical updates, with parts bin to create this new motorcycle. It's a very simple project in that sense. The instrument cluster is new for this bike. It's similarly shaped
as the
current new Pulsars are getting. The left half of the speedometer...
I was fumbling over which one we spoke.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. They all have the same one now. The left half of the LCD display is also very similar, but this is a segmented color LCD.
Mm.
So the fuel gauge has green lines and a red line to show you that it's in reserve, and the rev counter has a color or whatever. And on the right side, there is a dot matrix screen so that they can show more information.
Like?
So a dot matrix screen allows you to display more text. It's not fixed like an LCD.
So is it for the connectivity aspect?
So for example, when I'm riding, we didn't try the connectivity, honestly, but when you're riding, it's showing you average fuel economy, instant fuel economy, trip A, trip B, whatever drama is going on. It gives you warning messages there. Mm. And this is a very insistent motorcycle. I rode hard on this ride and I ran out of fuel much earlier than I thought I would. I ran low on fuel much earlier than I thought. So when the distance to empty hit something like 100 kilometers or something, two red bars showing, it said low fuel. And this warning wouldn't dismiss until I manually intervened and dismissed it. So it just said low fuel. And at this point, I can't see my range left. I can't see my average fuel economy. I can't see how far I've come.
And you're 100 kilometers of range left.
I have DTE 100 approximately. Okay, great. So I have to dismiss this warning. So I dismissed it. When it got to DTE 90, it said refuel. My mother has not spoken to me in that tone so far yet. And what is my DTE at that point? It's 90. Yeah. How far away I am from Chakan plant at that point? Maybe 75. It never shows you what is your range to empty.
Oh.
For which you have to go through the menus and find where it is. It is in Bike Info, under Trip A and Trip B, and then you go and show you DTE. But until you go into the menu and say, I want DTE to be displayed as one of my four items that I normally see, it does not display distance to empty.
Hey, listen, what tires?
Okay, so tires are also a cost-saving area for that. So it's 110 front, just like the Dominar has, but Dominar has radials. This does not. The rear, there are lots of 150 section tires in this. The Pulsar gets a 140 section radio.
Oh.
So there's some cost saving going on there, but decent tires. I'd never felt like the tires were the weak spot in the chassis. And I rode pretty hard.
Which ones are these?
MRF.
MRF.
Yeah. Okay. So good tires. I don't have a problem. Is the lack of one section at the back going to affect you? In terms of tire choice, perhaps, because the 150s have a lot of excellent tires available.
Correct.
You will not be able to access that tire size. Would I tell you to upgrade your tire size to the 150 so you can get access? I would tell you not to. The chassis in a very nice balance. I would not want to upset this balance by putting a heavier tire at the back. The thing that really upset me is that the UI UX design is just atrocious. Okay, first of all, it's a dot matrix screen, but it's not a high resolution dot matrix screen. The dots are pretty big. So everything looks pretty chunky and blocky. Then for, I don't know what reason, but they've gone and put a blue backlight on it.
Okay.
And there's not enough contrast. So it's really difficult to read the text. So you'll be squinting and you'll be sort of trying to get the sun out of your eyes and whatever, trying to see how far have I come or what my average fuel economy or whatever is. It's really difficult to read. And then the Bajaj menu systems today are just a little bit of a disaster because they do give you shortcut buttons. And we spoke about this on the Swart Pillen. Actually, we forgot to speak about this on the Swart Pillen. But if you use a shortcut and you finish using the shortcut, it doesn't exit you out to your main screen. It exits you into whatever menu the shortcut is sitting in.
Okay.
So on the first side, they say you have to be under 20 kmph to access these menus because it's unsafe. You cannot be doing this at speed, except if you use a shortcut, in which case, have at it.
Ah.
So if you change a riding mode, and you can at speed, it has some weird stuff there too. I'll just tell you in a minute. But as soon as you exit that menu, you're back in the full menu system and it's completely open and unrestricted, which is just unsafe. So it's like the UI UX guys, they basically finished their checklist and didn't think things through, right? So how do you select a mode? Now, on the most advanced motorcycles that we ride today, they say you finish the job of playing with the menus first. So you say, I want to change a riding mode. This is the riding mode I want to select. And here I have selected my riding mode. And then the motorcycle will tell you, I need you to release the brakes if they're on. I need you to close the throttle so that I can make the mode change happen. The Bajaj does the reverse. First, you release the throttle.
Acha. Oh.
So the entire mode change is me out of control of this motorcycle because I'm sitting on a trailing throttle, which at 50 kilometers an hour in fifth or sixth gear on an empty road is absolutely no challenge at all.
Oh, and closed throttle.
Closed throttle, right? Now you're in first or second gear at that speed. You've closed the throttle. It's a really reactive situation. It's slowing down rapidly in the middle of which you're trying to get through the menu so you can get back on the throttle. It just makes no sense. So the guys who are doing the UI UX work, and I don't think this is just Bajaj, TVS also has similar issues. Think about what the user experience will be rather than what your job right now is. If your job is to execute a mode change, please find the most convenient way for a rider to make a mode change so that he doesn't have to think about this item. But if I have to do this whole coordination exercise of saying I need to be under a certain speed, I need to close the throttle, then I will open the menu, then I will go through the menu. I am varying my speed a lot through this whole selection process. It makes me less safe.
Yeah, because the default would be closed throttle.
And you can do it at any point before.
Correct.
On the Ducati, I'll just give you an example. I will select, say I'm in urban mode. I want to go to touring mode. I will play with the menus. It takes a quarter of a second. Select that mode. Then the bike says closed throttle.
Correct.
So my actual speed variation happens half a second or a second. And some of these systems will remember your selection for a known amount of time. So the earlier Ducatis, I think they used to remember selections for 30 seconds. So,
and then you also have to switch out of the menus all the way back.
And then you have to do this all the way to the back. The advantage of this all the way to the back is when it said refuel as an instruction, I was able to dismiss it. because I dismissed it, I made a mode change, I was in the menus again. So then I was able to go into bike info and then find where my DTE information was to recheck. Was it a crisis or was it an imagined crisis? Mm. And because I was just 75 kilometers from the factory and I had 90 kilometers of range left, I was in an artificial crisis.
So it wasn't actually that it was misreading. You did manage to cover the 75 kilometers.
No, I refueled because why would I want to give Bajaj a bike with no fuel in it and then have them have to struggle with it because they're inside the plant. Not that they can't organize fuel, but somebody has to carry a thing. It's easier for me to go to a petrol pump and fill gas. It's not a problem.
Okay.
But as a rider outside in the world tomorrow, it's an unnecessary crisis.
Hmm.
And it's being built up into a worry point, whereas it's just a piece of information because you've got 100 kilometers of range left.
No, frankly, it sounds ridiculous that a warning would come up at 100 kilometers on a motorcycle. That's...
Yeah, so look, when we were riding in near Alwar in Delhi and I was on a Rocketry Roadster. And that thing's DTE warnings start coming at 120 kilometers out. But if you ride a Rocketry really fast, yep, that 120 will drop to 30 before you know it.
That
so
I understand
why it happens so early, yeah, exactly. Right? The Pulsar is rated at 28.5 kilometers per liter in the real world, according to Bajaj. I don't know what the ARAI number is. This is the number they claim.
Wow, but that's a solid number actually for this bike.
Correct. So this is what I'm saying. Keep thinking about this as a very potent commuter-ish Pulsar and not a sporty Pulsar. Then your expectation will be correct. Whether you like it or not is not what I'm going into. I'm just setting an expectation. So I'm saying it's a clever product, but it's not an exciting product.
Hmm.
Right? And then there is the question of what the Z stands for. Right? Because Bajaj has not explained what the Z as an abbreviation stands for. But it seems like Bajaj is creating a line of variants. And if they're going to create a variant of the 400, I don't think it can go any cheaper than this. Although if anybody could pull it off, it would be Bajaj. But it can't go cheaper than this. So I'm assuming a more expensive, better equipped version will come. If that happens, I would like to see the bike have an aggressive mode in there for people who like to ride their motorcycles in a sporty manner. Right? I rode the NS200 and I really enjoyed riding it because it had that sporty character and it needed to. And that character of this engine has not changed in that way. From 6,000 RPM, it does have a burst of performance. 7,000 RPM vibration returns. Right off the bottom, 3,000, 4,000 RPM, there is quite a bit of vibration that you will notice. Not enough to say this is a terrible motorcycle, but you'll notice that there is vibration there. From 4 to about 6, it is reasonably smooth. Not super smooth, it is smooth.
I'm confused, honestly.
Hmm.
Because you're saying there is more vibration higher up?
Just as the Dominar used to. You remember the first version of the Dominar had quite a bit of vibration?
The first was a 250, right?
No. 400 was first, 250 came much later. 250 is the smooth Dominar.
250 is the smooth Dominar, sorry.
So the first 400 had quite a bit of vibration. Yeah. And remember that one had the collector box?
And the rear suspension.
That had the collector box that would grind everywhere and the suspension that would kick out of the seat at the first available opportunity, right? Then they updated the Dominar.
See, I wasn't kidding, I had forgotten.
Then they updated the Dominar, collector box was tucked in better, rear suspension was softened out a little bit and the vibration was controlled better. This vibration controlled better engine is here.
Okay.
It's exactly one-to-one that engine. No real updates apart from emissions changes.
Hmm.
So those characters have also come.
Hmm.
So is it a smooth engine? Yes, reasonably.
Okay.
There is vibration 3 to 4,000 RPM, which you'll feel in the handlebar. Hmm. Then it'll smoothen out quite a bit. And then from 6,000, there is a step up in performance.
So at 100, what's it like? It's clean? I mean, where...
It's clean. It, like the Dominar is clean, this is also clean. Yeah, I'm telling you, Dominar's clean, this is also clean.
Mm.
There are fueling issues that I faced on this bike.
Mm.
I don't know if the other guys picked up on it or not. You'll have to see the other guys' reviews. But this bike was not fueling well.
Oh.
There was fluffing around going on in the fueling and it was a little bit unpredictable for my taste. And remember, we are riding pre-production motorcycles. The start of production of this motorcycle has not happened as we speak. So the 400Z is not in production on the day that we are recording. It will be by the time you see it. But fine-tuning a map is not that complicated a picture because it literally is a small variation somewhere.
Mm.
But did I feel like this was a consistently clean fueling motorcycle after a long time from Bajaj? No. There is room to improve a little bit there. So my feedback to Bajaj basically is centered on the engine, where the vibration is not bugging me, fuel economy is not bugging me, but fueling needs to be a little bit cleaner. Sport mode needs to be a heck of a lot more aggressive for it to say Pulsar and connect directly to the NS200.
Mm. Yeah.
If this was an N400Z, having spoken about the N250 in the previous Motoring First, which you should watch for reference if you like, I would connect it more directly to the N250 than to the NS200. And a more aggressive sport mode, I think, would give you that connection. Bajaj's strategy is very similar to what they tried with the 250s, except that the 250 segment itself doesn't seem to have as much traction as the 400s now. If you remember, there was a time when Bajaj had what, 7 250s or 5 250s or something like that. So Duke 250, Adventure 250, Swartpillen 250, Witpillen 250, N250, F250. They had 6 motorcycles in the 250cc class, and they were setting up for the idea saying this is going to be a popular segment and we'll have a lot of product options. So if Royal Enfield uses a small number of product options to create a great buying experience in terms of choice, Bajaj was going the other way and said, we'll have a lot of products. And if you think about what they're doing with the 400s, that's what we are at. So at 1.85 lakh rupees, you have the NS400Z. Above that, they have the Speed 400. Above which, they have the Scrambler 400X. Above which, they have the 390 Duke, the Swartpillen 401. Above which they'll have the 390 Adventure, and the new one will come in 2025. And we believe that this time the Adventure will have a hardcore off-road version with a 21-inch front wheel and a relatively soft core off-road bike with a 19-inch front wheel, which will be more touring oriented. So if you think about what's going to happen, Bajaj will have a 400cc range that starts at just under 2 lakh rupees and goes to almost 3.5 lakh rupees. Offering the option of off-roader, ADV, scrambler, aggressive street bike, non-aggressive street bike, cost-effective bike. So clearly they're placing the bets on the idea that the 400cc class is going to be a really popular and really lucrative class of middleweight motorcycles. Royal Enfield is bounded by the idea that they're a retro brand, so they won't do a lot of exploration. And if you look at the Himalayan, it's a super conservative retro ADV, where they could have been as modern in ADV as they felt like being, and they didn't do it. So Rajiv has been trying to get Siddharth's money for a long time, as it were. And these are his words, not mine. And I think the way is, they've tried competing head-on with Royal Enfield with the Dominar, which attacked the Classic 350 and absolutely got nowhere. Jo hathi palne ki baat thi, wo Dominar owners ke aankh mein aake baithi. They are the guys with the hathis today. And I think now the new strategies can be flank them. So the Classic 350, which is the market leader in this displacement class of motorcycles, not the genre class, is at 2 lakh 20. So Rajiv has a product now that is 40 below. And products that sit like a lakh and 20 above. That's the full picture of the motorcycle. So I honestly had a great ride. I had a really, really good time riding. I didn't notice the heat. I didn't notice the distance. I had a fantastic time riding this bike.
Before we get there, something we spoke about earlier, the tires. Switching just the rear tire by itself is not a great idea. Because typically when you have a matched set of tires, the way the shape of the tire is, the size, all of that is meant to sync and create a character for the bike. So correct. When you change just one, you're going to get a mix in terms of the feeling, as likely as not.
Yes, and if you want to do the mixing of the feelings, prepare for a long time mixing and matching tires until you find two brands, two different things that actually work together really well and make you happy. It can be done. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of trial and error. The safe way and the fast way is somebody has worked out how to match front to rear. Use that knowledge to your benefit and you'll discover there'll be certain brands you enjoy and certain brands you don't, and that's fine.
Yeah. Headlamp.
Yeah, so we didn't ride in the night at all, but Bajaj has typically made really powerful LEDs, so I'm not expecting this bike to be any different.
So is this the same? I mean, it has those funny things.
So the funny things are the new DRL. It has the Z shape because this is the 400Z.
Ah, okay. Now I
think
the Z.
That's a stretch.
Oh, okay.
I think this is a connection marketing made later and not designer made first. So I wouldn't put too much into
that's
this.
The only Z element.
But that's the only. No, there's a badge which also has a Z in it. I mean, aisa kya baat? But the headlamp is the same as far as I can tell as the N250. The fairing is slightly reworked, but it's the same overall shape as the NS200 today with the updated DRLs. The DRLs are longer and they occupy more of the face. Because I was riding into a media event knowing that there were NS400s, as they passed me by, I noticed them. But on the average day, will I notice that, oh, there's an NS400Z that went by? I'm not convinced.
So is the projector headlamp the same as the 250s?
Yeah.
It's the same one?
As far as I can tell, they're the same. Bajaj didn't talk about it, so I'm assuming is that unit moved here.
Okay. So effectively, it's just those DRLs that are giving it a different look.
Yeah, which is what the car guys also did when the DRL thing was new, remember? Everybody had a different shape of the DRL to identify their individual model lines and versus other brands. And I think the bikes will also now do the same.
And in terms of design?
Yeah. So the thing that I think I really wrong-footed my expectation is this is the flagship for the Pulsar brand, which wears the NS tag, which is their sporty premium idea. But for some reason, the styling is more or less exactly the same as the NS200. So the headlight fairing we talked about, because the radiator is now larger, and Bajaj has put a single fan and not a curve, so it's a wide radiator. They had to build new shrouds, so they did. Now, because the shrouds stick out further from the tank comes out a little bit, so there's sort of like a wing kind of structure. It's not like a wing, but it's a shape which comes out and matches the shroud. So that much the tank is new. And because they did that, they also did the same kind of outward shape on the tailpiece as well. Does it look like an NS? Yes. Does it look like an updated NS? Yes. But does it look like a fresh NS? No.
How is this the flagship, man?
Exactly. This is why I said right at the beginning, saying it's meant to be the flagship, but is it is a question mark. So, will you be happy if you buy an NS400Z if your expectations are of a reasonably powerful commutery kind of motorcycle? Yes.
Yeah.
But if you have the idea of Pulsar is stunt mania and all of that kind of drama, this is a very, very subtle, gentle motorcycle built to a price.
Like, I mean, going back, this is something we discussed in the previous Pulsar discussions as well, that the idea of the Pulsar came from it punched above, right? It offered more than what anybody else offered, right?
Yeah. So this time, they did tell us how this NS400Z punches above.
Oh.
Because torque to price ratio is the best in the segment.
So that's it. It all comes down to the price.
Which is what I said at the start, if you think about it. I said price is the linchpin for this entire discussion.
This isn't even the Pulsar Classic that we were hoping for.
Yeah.
And it, it is a 10, 12-year-old Pulsar.
You know, it feels a little bit like an uncle bike. Little bit. Look, the uncle term is a very useful term, okay? And I'm allowed to use it because I'm old enough to be called an uncle and many kids do in my building. But, you know, it's like that whole youthful aggression of the Pulsar. It's actively being held in check and it's almost as if we'll give access to that kind of aggression to KTMs. Mm. But the Pulsars don't need it. Mm. And I'm not even saying hyper-aggression like maybe the KTMs are.
Yeah.
It's not even basic aggression.
Yeah.
So, did I have a good ride? Yes. Am I excited about the NS400Z? No. Is it competent? Yes. Could it have been more than competent? That's what I'm missing.
You know where I was at? I was just thinking that 10 years ago, 390 Duke, right? I was coming back to that because back then, near 400cc, 40-something horsepower, 44 horsepower motorcycle for 2 lakh rupees was insane.
Yeah.
Right? And today, the 390 Duke is what?
3.1.
3.1 X showroom, right? So that's more than 50% increase. I was just thinking, if that personality, you know, was being offered at, and that was the beauty of the 390 Duke, it was the personality that drew people in, right?
Correct.
It was this fantastically flawed, fast, but lovable motorcycle,
correct,
right? That you had to live with its flaws. Its suspension wasn't great. For that time, the handling was awesome. But as we look back at it, the handling could have been better in so many different ways, right? It had its flaws, but it was so endearing. And that is why people were drawn to it and continue to talk about it.
Yeah. And I've always said, perfection is not about not having flaws. Mm-hmm. It's about having the flaws in the right place.
Right.
Right. And that's why the idea of perfection for you will also be defined by who you are, what you prefer, etc., etc.
So, I was hoping that Pulsar could take that. I mean, that strain of madness is what…
I think the agenda for the Pulsar is to sell AF. It has a single point agenda now.
But is it?
It looks like it. I mean, it's the only thing that is going to do. Look, the Pulsar tagline, by the way, has changed from definitely male to definitely daring.
Acha.
Yeah, I don't know where this Pulsar was daring at all. I don't know what it dared and I don't know what it won. Because there is nothing about this Pulsar that stands out as an extraordinary achievement apart from pricing. And if your biggest talking point is price, then by inference, by corollary, by extrapolation, its job has to be to sell.
Okay.
So I think Masi, not classy, seems to be the actual tagline. So, good bike, yes. Great bike, could have been. Great price, yes. The moment you buy this bike and bring it home, the price has no more value left for you. So think about how you're going to do it. As I always say, you must get a test ride before you make your own decision. But if you're looking for the idea of, I have a 400 and nothing more, it's a great purchase for the price.
If you're thinking of buying a used 390 Duke, and thought that this would be like getting a new 390 Duke for the same price.
Not even in the same ballpark. And I'm not saying that Duke is better. I'm saying temperamentally two entirely different events. If you're in the aggressive mindset, don't get the 400. It doesn't have aggression.
But why would I buy a 400 and not want something that's exciting?
Again, I'm not going to say that everybody needs aggression and excitement. Some people just want the 400 badge.
Could this be a first bike?
Yeah, in some ways. I mean, as much as I hesitate to tell you that a 40 bhp bike is a great idea for your first bike, yes, it is non-aggressive, it is simple and gentle and all of that kind of thing, and it, you can wind it up and it will hit 150 kilometers an hour if you really, really wind it up. So yeah, in theory, yes.
All right.
I would still rather that you had an aggressive 25 bhp bike than a super gentle 40 as a way to learn, if you want to learn to ride better. You want to be challenged. But if I bring a 40 bhp aggressive motorcycle to that challenge, it's just too much. So because it's gentle, yes. But gentle, I've always said this for all bikes that are super, super gentle. If you're an aggressive kind of rider, you end up with a gentle motorcycle, even with a lot of performance, you will get bored faster with it.
Perfect.
Quick summary.
Oh man, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, and please guys, rate his summary. It's very important. It has to, we have to keep Karthikeya on his toes.
It's not the NS200's frame. It's the Dominar's frame, which is being used for the Pulsar NS400Z. It's also a Z because of the headlamps, possibly. That's the only place
DRL, you see DRL,
it. Not the DRLs.
If it was the headlight, it'll be a Mahindra, it'll be a O.
Okay, I'm going to start again. Chal. This one is...
I'm going to leave that in.
Oh, not because of that. It's just, okay, chal. We jump from chassis to headlamp, that's why. But theek hai, continued. So it has Z-shaped LED DRLs. It's got the projector headlamp, which looks very similar to what the N and the F250 got, and apparently would be the same since Bajaj didn't say that it was any different from that. Design-wise, it ends up looking like the NS200, which is maybe a good thing, but it's also not looking very fresh. And as a flagship, it certainly will be underwhelming, considering that this is now the most powerful, the most expensive, and the latest Pulsar. But the familiarity factor is too high. On that front, the familiarity factor also continues with the engine, which is what was used on the Dominar. It's tuned slightly differently. This motorcycle is much lighter than the Dominar. So it's sharing a lot with the Dominar, but it's also much lighter than it. Shumi shared a whole bunch of percentages.
That's only because I can't figure out how you'd make a bike that's even heavier than the Dominar in this class. It had to be lighter, but I'm glad it's 18 kilos. It's not some insignificant amount.
Yeah. So it's in the 170 range, whereas the Duke is somewhere in the 160 range. So it's a nice place to be in terms of weight for the motorcycle. They've really come down on that number. What you're getting are... the same hardware in terms of the suspension as well, which is 43mm upside down forks at the front and a monoshock at the rear, which is completely tuned differently compared to the Dominar because this has a different geometry for the chassis. It's got a sharper steering angle, which is about 25 degrees. It's got a smaller wheelbase. So it's a more compact, light feeling motorcycle. It's also got different size rear tire. It's 140 section, not a 150, which is what you'd typically see in motorcycles in this class. The front is a 110, not a radial, which is a step down, but in terms of grip and feel, it felt all right. And in terms of how it handled, Shumi enjoyed that. He said it felt like that small motorcycle, which turns in together, the front and the rear feels very nicely connected and lined up. So it felt good that way. The handlebar is a one-piece handlebar, not a split handlebar. You're sitting fairly similar to what it's like on the 200 NS, and that is a good thing. It feels slightly sporty, not too sporty. The only thing is it's got a slight old-school feel where you sit a little high up on the motorcycle rather than in the motorcycle. But it's a fun feeling that you get when you're chucking it around corners, which Shumi did also on the track, and that was good. The only thing is the brakes are all right. These are Grimeca's with organic pads and those lighter carriers for the discs as well. So you save weight there with the alloy wheels as well, which is something that they've done constantly with all the, starting with the KTMs, you know, they started with the RCs.
Started with the N's and 250s before the KTMs, to be honest.
Oh, really?
They first saved weight on the N250s.
Okay.
And then this generation of KTMs also got lighter wheels.
Okay.
So I'd rather credit that they started there than the KTMs.
All right, there we go. So it started with the N's, went to the KTMs, and now back to this Pulsar. Aside from that, what is the big thing? In terms of the catch, it's that the performance is too gentle. The throttle response is quite gradual. It's too gradual almost.
It's definitely mild, not daring.
And so basically it feels you have to give in a lot of inputs to really get the motorcycle going. And that applies even to the sport mode. So as Shumi said, that the base mode, it's got four ride modes, which control throttle and the ABS and traction control. So it's not just down to ABS. So the base is rain, which is very soft and would be great for newer riders riding in
slippery conditions.
And over there, you'll find a softer throttle. When you go to the off-road mode, you also have more latitude for the ABS and the traction control. So just allowing for a bit more slip so that you get more traction and can have forward movement and more control on the motorcycle. Then you come to the normal or road mode, where it steps up in terms of responsiveness. And of course, the interventions will be a little bit not as relaxed as the off-road mode, but still reasonably all right. Sport mode is where it steps up in terms of throttle response, but that was the big complaint. It's not sharp enough. It's not urgent enough, even in sport mode. It still feels fairly commutery. It does have some vibrations. Shumi said somewhere about 4,000 RPM, then higher up in the rev range, but not enough to get in the way of your riding or enjoyment of the motorcycle. He spent about 240 kilometers riding it, and that was not his primary complaint about the motorcycle. It was the gentleness or mildness of the performance. I think the key statement there was he felt it was a fast 250, not a slow 400 or just a calm 400. Right. Yeah. So that was the sense that it left him with. Aside from that, fuel efficiency that they've claimed is 28.5, and which for this engine we've seen in the past with Dukes getting even 25, etc., was a big deal. Was a solid number. So if you get to 28 and all, that's pretty impressive. Aside from that, the instrument cluster was brought up. It's a slim kind of design, similar to what we've seen on the other Pulses recently, but this is a color segmented LCD unit. So it's got some color gradations for your fuel tank. It's got a text readout section on the right, which is where you see all the messages for low fuel warning. And that was one of the things also that annoyed him, because low fuel warning came up with a distance to empty readout of 100 kilometers.
And you can't see the distance to empty because it's telling you you're low on fuel, but not helping you by saying, okay, so what's left?
What's left?
That's
right.
All you have to hunt for by yourself. It's correct. Unfriendly, unhelpful, and insistent.
And so the menus were a grouse for him while he was riding the motorcycle, not just for this, because to dismiss those notifications, but even to change ride modes, because to do that, the system demands that you first close the throttle rather than you getting to the point where you are shifting modes actually and then needing to close the throttle. So it just slows you down tremendously, which is also dangerous, frankly, in the middle of your ride somewhere. So that can definitely be improved. There were also issues with the fueling of the motorcycle.
It was inconsistent for a fair bit.
So there's that sense of connection that's missing between the motorcycle and the rider and the way it's doing, especially for a 400cc motorcycle.
Yes, connection is a very powerful word.
Right, and that is somewhere the expectation for me was that this is going back in time and giving us maybe that wildness of the Duke at the same price point 10 years down the road, which it isn't. It is offering you a lot of specs, a lot of convincing specs at an incredible price point. And finally, the kingpin, so to speak, or the pivot point for this motorcycle is the price, which is frankly incredible.
Yes.
But the experience is not as incredible.
Correct. So it's the opposite of motoring subscriptions if you think about it. The pricing doesn't appear to be incredible, the content is. The other part of this that I was thinking about after this is the creation of experiences for premium customers is not going well for the market, if you think about it. Royal Enfield has always done this, create a premium experience for their customers. And they're pretty decent at it now. TVS has not moved towards the premium experience game at all because their showrooms are still running blue tube lights and all of that drama. And you can see it in the comments. They're not able to manage to give good service experiences to people either. Right? Honda created Big Wing, then they created Big Wing Top Line. Nobody knows which one is which. But there's a lot of confusion and there's not a lot of great products in there in that product line. If you go brand by brand by brand, Bajaj has the largest exposure to this whole class. And the KTMs are very clear in terms of their branding. Triumphs are becoming super clear about their branding. Husqvarna has always been a little here and there, and they're still a little bit here and there, but it's clearer than before at the very minimum.
100%.
Right? Yeah. Which means that the confusing brand left is their own brand.
Mm.
It's kind of nuts if you think about it.
No, I think this is coming back to the, I think this is a manufacturing orientation rather than a market orientation. To me, the way I look
at it. But Bajaj ka bahut purana hai na.
So, abhi, I mean, like what we've discussed with for other brands, like let's say in cars, what was considered hygiene, what is considered hygiene today was phenomenal a few years ago.
Sure.
Right? And I think that change of the market landscape is changing what this means to us today, right?
Yeah, and I think Bajaj has for a long time built bikes that were convenient for the factory to make rather than good for the customers to buy.
Because frankly, I can't make any other sense of all the Discovers and the various pulses that we got over the years.
No, and look, their kings of parts bin sharing is a dual statement. One side it says they're very clever about how they do these things. The other part of it is they share so much that it has to be the supply chain guy making a lot of decisions on the behalf of the designer, the engineer and everybody else. Like, for example, if I say this bike is a very premium experience, so let's have a completely different instrument cluster. The supply chain guy is saying, no, keep the external dimensions the same, otherwise I'll have to do so many other things. So suddenly the designer who was trying to design, let's say a TFT screen, has been put back in a vaguely triangular layout. And now TFT is no longer possible because TFTs are square, which is why the integration of this dot matrix screen, which are also typically square, into that console, it's bargain basement. It's one black thing with a blue square in the middle. I mean, you think about the Harley Davidson square screen in the round meter.
Yeah.
That's better integrated than this one.
Right.
At least they tried to match the hard-painted lines on the dial face with the digital lines so that the continuity of the circle, at least in the night, looks like one unit. And it does. In the day, it looks weird. But in the night, at least, no. The two screens, if you were to put a wall in the middle as if batwara ho gaya and elder son took the left and the younger son took the right, they're two different plots. What are you laughing at?
Batwara ho gaya.
That's what the screen feels like. It doesn't feel like the left talks to the right and the right talks to the left.
So, I did sneak at the pics of the motorcycle before we chatted, of course. And that screen definitely felt budget.
Yeah, it feels like it has more equipment, but somehow it is less classy than the last one.
Yeah.
So, okay. I think we've belabored the point enough. We'll get the motorcycle for testing and we'll have a more comprehensive story once we do.
If you have any other questions, please do let us know in the comments. You know, we're going to get back to you. Anything else that needs to be covered?
No, I think we're good. We are waiting for the CNG motorcycle to come next.
Rugger.
I think that was one of the names that was in the running, but I don't believe it is anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right.
So, I don't know what the final thing will be called.
Rugger.
I don't know. I know that maybe the Avenger update is not being processed at all. So, if anybody's Avenger fans out there, and I know you guys have commented, I don't think there are any updates coming to the Avenger at all. I think the Dominar might get an update. It looks like the NS400 will have variants.
Will there be an RS400?
Logically, there should be. But first, they have to update the RS200 also, which I think Rajiv Bajaj did mention somewhere that they are working on an RS200 update also. I'm hoping that they change the styling because it's a little messy and very old styling now. And it used to cause a lot of rattles because the plastic wasn't of the greatest quality and it had lots of interface points, etc. I'm hoping that they solve that this time.
Right.
Bajaj, because they have so many brands, they obviously have a lot of action coming, right? So the CNG bike, RS200, maybe RS400, maybe NS400 variants, then the Adventure 390 update, RC390 update will be right after that. And then there's a rumor swirling that KTM's bigger bikes will also come to the market.
Ooh.
Right? I don't know how many will come. Will they all come together? Will it be a phased sequence of arrival, whatever? So there's a lot of action.
All right, please.
So that was what we understood about the NS400Z after I rode it about 240 kilometers around Maharashtra. Very promising motorcycle if your expectations are just about value for money or badge value. Not so great if you're looking for a super nice, aggressive 400 to ride. Do take a test ride and let us know what you think. And once we get the motorcycle for testing, then obviously we'll have other stories like view and balance, etc. And Motoring First will also be available audio only if you prefer on Apple, Spotify, Google and Amazon. Google Podcasts will go away in June. So these episodes will be there till June. After that, you'll have to figure out some other way to listen to them. Thank you so much for watching.